Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, July 11th. Lizards endangered listing called unfair. Landowners oil company say they had already complied with requirements. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's recent listing of the Dunes sagebrush lizard brought a big say what from ranchers, landowners, and oil and gas companies who had spent decades conserving the lizard's habitat. With FWS spokeswoman Beth Uhlenberg warning the fines of $50,000 and prison terms could be assessed to those who failed to comply. The threatened individuals and companies say they had complied perfectly with the Texas conservation plan, and it had proved much more effective in protecting the lizard than the Federal Endangered Species Act, which only had a 2% species recovery rate. The ESA has been manipulated and used as a political tool by environmental activist organizations for many years to disrupt oil and natural gas operations, and the federal government is a willing participant despite the proactive, collaborative, and successful efforts by our industry to protect the habitat of this species, said Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Ed Longenecker. These tactics could delay or prevent permits that are needed for exploration and production activities, all by design, and have a reverberating impact on the U.S. economy. The American Conservation Foundation said in 2020 that less than 20% of the lizard's allotted habitat acres had been disturbed by TCP participants. This low number indicates that the proactive management efforts of the TCP participants on private lands is protecting DSL habitat from agricultural and industrial development, the ACF said. TCP participants continue to promote the conservation of DSL habitat while continuing to promote economic development for private landowners in the Permian Basin. Implemented in 2012, the TCP was developed in consultation with federal and state agencies and organizations, including the Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Texas A&M University, the Texas Railroad Commission, and the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. Then Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said the agreement was the right thing for conservation and the right thing for the economy. Last month, August Pfluger introduced a congressional review to nullify the lizard's listing, while the Permian Basin Petroleum Association and the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association challenged the quality of the science used to list the DSL, noting that the FWS report found that the Dunes sagebrush lizard only occupied about 4% of the Permian Basin. Listing the Dunes sagebrush lizard as an endangered species is another effort by the Biden administration to shut down drilling in the Permian Basin, Pfluger said. President Biden is attempting to use a lizard as a weapon against the oil and gas industry. U.S. Senator John Cornyn said an endangered species listing for the lizard would have had devastating consequences for Texas jobs and for the nation's energy security, while American Petroleum Association President Scott Lauerman said the designation could delay the permits that companies need for every phase of oil and gas exploration and extraction. Permian Basin Petroleum Association President Ben Shepherd said, "The lizard is not in danger of extinction. Not overnight, but over the coming months, we believe that this is going to lead to a decrease in drilling and in job losses," Shepherd said. Arkansas Congressman Bruce Westerman, the ranking member of the House Natural Resources Committee in Washington, D.C., said, "It is time to restore some common sense to the ESA and make it work for the American people, not use it as a bludgeon for political gain." This is another disappointing announcement for the farmers, ranchers, and domestic energy producers who are all working diligently to be good stewards of the environment and wildlife habitat, Westerman said. Odessa Fire Rescue Citizens Fire Academy applications open. Applications for the Citizens Fire Academy are now open. The course is held every Tuesday from September through November from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. It is a way for you to gain hands-on experience, go on ride-alongs during emergencies, and learn the daily operations of Odessa Fire Rescue. Applications are now open. Deadline to apply is July 31st. Children's Literacy and Reading Festival. The Woodson Boys and Girls Club of Odessa Children's Literacy and Reading Festival is scheduled 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. July 27th at 1037 East Murphy Street. The event is free to the public and will have free giveaways, free food, free backpacks and school supplies, and free children's books. The festival will also feature entertainment including games, activities, door prizes, local vendors, DJ One Way, cheer dance entertainment, and story time. Visit tinyurl.com/26T7FMZC. Children's Literacy and Reading Festival. The Woodson Boys and Girls Club of Odessa Children's Literacy and Reading Festival is scheduled 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. July 27th at 1037 East Murphy Street. The event is free to the public and will have free giveaways, free food, free backpacks and school supplies, and free children's books. The festival will also feature entertainment including games, activities, door prizes, local vendors, DJ One Way, cheer dance entertainment, and story time. Visit tinyurl.com/26T7FMZC. Specialists say there are benefits to couples sleeping separately. Michael Solander and his wife have been together for 42 years. They slept in the same bed for the first 10, taking to separate rooms after that. Their sleep separation was due to his developing chronic and heavy snoring that eventually led to a diagnosis of sleep apnea and his use of a CPAP machine. After the machine eliminated his snoring, they continue to sleep apart in their Charlotte, North Carolina home because of other issues. He's typically warm at night and she's usually cold. For us to maintain separate rooms for sleep just makes for a healthier relationship and a better relationship, said Solander, 66. There's no shame attached to that. There's no stigma. Snoring, temperature variations, cover stealers, and tossing and turning often lead to partners sleeping separately. Other issues are also in play, including illness, different work shifts, and partners who go to bed and get up at different times. More than one-third of Americans say they occasionally or consistently sleep in another room to accommodate a bed partner, according to an American Academy of Sleep Medicine study last year. Men are the ones who usually hit the sofa or guest room, and perhaps surprisingly, it's millennials who do it most rather than older people. Dr. Seema Khosla, a pulmonologist and spokesperson for the Academy, said achieving adequate sleep which is usually 7 to 8 hours for adults, is important for healthy relationships. Studies indicate that people who consistently experience poor sleep are more likely to experience conflict with their partners, said Khosla, who is the medical director of the North Dakota Center for Sleep in Fargo. It's really a question of people prioritizing their sleep, Khosla said. I have had patients who have been married like 60 years and they swear that separate bedrooms is a reason. Sleeping separately, she said, is probably more common than we think. The same goes for sleep apnea, a leading cause of heavy snoring, Khosla said. Solander said he went to a sleep specialist after realizing the impact sleep deprivation had on himself and his wife. I would wake her up and would wake myself up, he said. I never knew I had sleep apnea. I would say close to 20 years ago, I started falling asleep at red lights. I started falling asleep watching TV or sitting up and reading a book. I felt tired constantly. That's when I knew I had an issue. Key to making separate sleep spaces work is talking about it beforehand, as Solander did with his wife. It's not about avoiding intimacy. It's about recognizing that you can have intimacy. You can have that same time together, but when you just sleep apart, that's a really important part of the conversation. Both partners need to understand and agree, Khosla said. She has seen some reluctance among her patients when she suggests sleeping apart. Usually it's somebody's spouse who is snoring or someone who has a spouse's alarm that wakes them up at 4 a.m. or something like that. We'll talk about it and people will push right back, saying, no, oh no, that's not going to work for me, she said. Some, Khosla said, will sit with it for a minute and they'll think about it. And you can tell that they're kind of like, I would love to do this, but how do I tell my partner? Tracy Daniels and her husband have been sleeping apart for about 4 years. Initially, there was no big talk. She just headed to the guest room. It started because my husband is a terrible snorer, but also I'm a very light sleeper. He would drop a paperclip on a carpet floor and I would wake up, said Daniels, who lives in Tyrone, North Carolina. Later, she said she initiated a conversation after she was diagnosed with breast cancer and went through surgery. He comes and tucks me in and gives me a kiss, Daniel said. They rotate their 3 dogs at night. Dr. Phyllis Z, chief of sleep medicine at Northwestern University, Feinberg School of Medicine, and director of a sleep clinic at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago, said sleep separation is common in her practice. It would be a great idea to discuss sleep compatibility before you get married. I tend to see it when couples have been married and or they've been together for some time and have been trying to negotiate this for a while, she said. Come middle age, Z said, sleep is less robust. In general, you're more prone to get things like insomnia or sleep apnea, and so that begins to be a bother, she said. While there's no shame in sleeping apart, Z said, technology has helped make sharing a bed easier in some ways. White noise machines, cooling pillows, and bedding mattresses with dual temperature controls and dual control electric blankets can help, Z said. Some couples have given up sharing blankets, using their own to make sleep easier. There's a whole market out there to mitigate some of these issues, she said. Sleep separation is more accepted now as people have become more aware of the importance of quality sleep to overall health, Z said. On the other hand, there is research to show there are benefits to sleeping together, she said. In general, probably the top line is seek professional help before making a decision. Are the issues a sign of a sleeping disorder that one can treat? Obituaries, Roberto Provincio. Roberto Papa Provincio, 70, of Odessa, was called home to the Lord July 5th, holding his daughter's hands and surrounded by loved ones. Robert was born January 14, 1954, to Martina and Alfredo Mendoza. A visitation for Roberto will be held Wednesday, July 10th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home, 1700 North Jackson Avenue. A chapel service at Odessa Funeral Home will occur Thursday, July 11th at 10 a.m., 1700 North Jackson Avenue, Odessa. A burial will occur Friday, July 12th at 2 p.m. at Mount Carmel Cemetery, El Paso. Viola Anna Taylor. Viola Anna Taylor passed peacefully at her home in Odessa on July 5th, surrounded by her loved ones. She was born on March 18, 1933, in Pulteney, Vermont, to Adeline and William Blatt. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, July 12th at 1 p.m. at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church with Deacon Leroy Morrison officiating. Gerald Wayne Jerry Thomas. Gerald Wayne Jerry Thomas passed away peacefully on July 7th at the age of 84 in Odessa, surrounded by his family who loved him dearly. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 13th at Crossroads Church with Griff Jones officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are in the care of Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jerry Don Tyler. Jerry Don Tyler, age 68, passed away Thursday, July 4th in Odessa. He was born November 10th, 1956, to Tom and Mary Tyler. Funeral service will be Friday, July 12th at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. A burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Enriqueta Franco Acosta. Enriqueta Franco Keita Acosta, 80, of Odessa, died Sunday, June 30th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. July 12th at Acres West 24-hour Funeral Chapel. Father Joe is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Linda Gale McClure Smart. Linda Gale Smart McClure, 69, of Odessa, died Sunday, July 1st in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 11:30 a.m. July 9th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Chris Hager is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Arthur Dennis Rankin. Arthur Dennis Rankin, 72, of Odessa, died Thursday, June 27th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. July 11th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Rita Jane Woodward Brents. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Rita Jane Brents Woodard, 75, of Odessa, died Friday, July 5th in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lifelong Odessan ready to serve. Cal Hendrick seeking mayor's seat. You don't get much more Odessa than Cal Hendrick. Hendrick's family settled here in the late 1880s, and he has lived his entire life here, minus time out for college, Angelo State University for a business degree, and then a law degree from the University of Texas, Austin. He grew up on the west side near Odessa High School, attending San Jacinto Elementary, Bowie Junior High, and graduating from Odessa High in 1983. Today he announced his candidacy to lead the city he loves as Odessa's mayor. He will face current Mayor Javier Hoven in the November election. "I want to serve the citizens of Odessa," he said. "Odessa is not only home for me, but for my family for the last 130 plus years. I want to see Odessa grow and flourish. I have a vision. My vision is to make Odessa a better place to live, work, play, and worship while carefully guiding the continuing economic growth and prosperity of our city." He said there are problems, failing water lines and valves, the water treatment plant, roads that need attention, work, problems with waste management trucks, trash and morale issues for city employees. He said now is the time for a calmer voice in the mayor's seat and to focus on critical thinking and problem solving. Hendricks said he plans a positive campaign and said if elected, he will focus on the critical issues such as water, trash, roads, and emergency services. "I want to see Odessa grow and flourish, and we can't have people without water. We need to reevaluate priorities and solve problems one at a time and understand there are no quick solutions." He said his time as a trial lawyer has honed his skills to solve those problems. "My clients have risks and problems, and my job is to find and solve those problems," he said. "My mediation skills have helped me to get along with people, and I work well with others." Hendricks said Odessa's city charter is based on a strong city manager, weak mayor form of government, meaning a mayor should not office out of City Hall and sit in on department meetings unless asked to do so. "I can be an asset to the city because I think I know what some of the problems are. Right now, people, city employees, are uncomfortable talking about because of fear of their jobs," he said. "No one should have to walk on eggshells every day because they work at City Hall." Hendricks cites his work as a trial lawyer for about 30 years at the Schaefer Law Firm and as a mediator as part of his skill set. "The skills I developed include analyzing complex problems and critical thinking," he said. "My goal was always to find the best solution to the problems that existed." He is currently the regional director of risk solutions at insurance firm McAnally Wilkins Incorporated and has been there since 2019. He is also a part-time mediator. He is married to Amy and they have two adult children, Hunter, who lives in Waxahachie, and Caitlin, who lives in Midland. Caitlin will marry James Payne in October. She is a graduate of Texas Christian University, and Payne is a Texas Tech University grad. Hunter works for Baylor White, Scott and White Health. Hendrick and his wife met in college and moved to Odessa after both graduated. Amy spent 10 years at Odessa College and another 10 years at Medical Center Hospital and is now retired. Both Cal and Amy Hendrick are avid volunteers. He has served as either a volunteer or board member at the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center, Crystal Ball Foundation, Jim Park Little League, Park House Ranching Museum, CASA, Samaritan Counseling Center, Bright Divinity School at TCU, Texas Wildlife Association, and the Sierra Clubs, to name a few. He said his family first found First Christian Church in 1908, and he is still a member of that church, now called Connection Christian Church. He is an avid hunter and enjoys time outside. He said it is time for a change at City Hall. "I have watched mayors for 35 years and have witnessed critical traits that are important for a mayor. A mayor must possess and demonstrate courtesy, respect, and common sense." He said a mayor should exhibit problem-solving skills and should possess a solution-based attitude. "I believe I possess those traits," he said. "I want Odessa to be the best city in Texas, thus every decision I make will be based on the mantra, what is best for the city of Odessa." He said he is not a politician and doesn't want to be one. But I will make you two promises, he added. First, I promise to work hard. Second, I promise every decision I make will be based on what I think is best for the city of Odessa. He said recent council meetings have spent too much time not focused on the real issues in Odessa. Recent meetings led by Hovind have held discussions about banning previous Odessa mayors from running for a city council seat after they have termed out as mayor. Hendrick questioned why that matters when, in the history of Odessa, it has happened one time. Why is time being wasted on that? He asked, how many times does a water main have to break before the city recognizes? We have a problem. I'm a little mad at everybody about the water issue. It's been kicked down the road too many times, and a master water plan has been ignored. He said aging lines are not the only water issue facing Odessa. Infrastructure is not very sexy. Water lines and treatment plants and trash tracks may not be exciting, but cities should do city stuff and not focus on social issues, he said. When the average person turns on the faucet, they expect water. He said he worries about a catastrophic failure to the city's water system. What will happen when we lose water for a week or a month, he said. How do you go to school or work? I made the decision to run and I want to serve, and I think I can focus on critical city issues like water. It's not going to solve itself. More on water. Hendrick said he is a fiscal conservative and for limited government and against increasing taxes or fees when many families are struggling with the cost of food, housing, gas, and every retail item from jeans to a pair of tennis shoes. He said the city must focus on the current water issues and find solutions, including how to fund repairs and the water system plant. In June of 2022, Odessa was without water for several days due to a faulty valve. He said federal and state monies are out there and Odessa must seek those funds. Not only do we have old and worn out water valves and water lines, we have a water treatment plant that is falling apart, he said. We have to focus our attention on water infrastructure. Our citizens, businesses, schools, and all of Odessa must have a reliable water system to ensure the city has water for the future. We live in a desert. Water is a precious commodity. Water must be our number one priority. He said this problem is not new. In 2018, the then city council commissioned a water study in order to create a water plan to meet Odessa's infrastructure needs for the next 25 years. The basis for the anticipated infrastructure improvements was to continue to provide exceptional service to Odessa's existing customers. Trash service trucks. Hendrick said solutions are still needed to fix Odessa's trash service issues and questioned how almost half of the trucks were recently out of service, leading to either spotty or limited trash pickup in some areas. It was recently reported that 18 out of 38 trucks, that is almost half, 47%, are out of service, he said. How in the heck does that happen? What was the mayor leadership? What have they done to alleviate the problem? How long has the problem existed? I know the city recently ordered 10 new trucks. However, the prior administration ordered 10. So even though over half of the trucking fleet has been down for over 4 years, the city just ordered 10 more? He also questioned the explanation that parts of the broken trucks cannot be located. Odessa has thousands of diesel mechanics, he said. Why hasn't the mayor reached out to the private sector and asked for help? I have heard parts of are a problem. Doesn't the mayor realize there are many, many local fabrication shops that might very well be able to fabricate parts? Has anyone called these fabrication shops in Odessa to see if they can fabricate the parts? I have, and several companies have told me they could likely fab the parts. Having almost 50% of the fleet down for over 4 years is unacceptable. Roads. Like the water master plan, Hendrick said, the city has a 75-page transportation master plan that outlined what needs to be repaired and what needs to be built. We all drive on the roads in Odessa every day, he said. In my humble opinion, the city roads are terrible. I know some roads have not been serviced or worked on in the past 10 years. Why aren't roads being properly maintained? Who hasn't heard of someone who's damaged a wheel or tire hitting potholes? Enough is enough. We need effective leadership to make Odessa roads safe and drivable. Role as mayor. Hendrick said the role of an Odessa mayor and the city council is to set policy and have 5 appointees who implement that policy. They, appointees, need to do their jobs, and the mayor and council need to determine the problems and set the agenda to solve those problems and let those people solve them. The elected officials need to step back and let the city flow according to the charter, he said. Hendrick said he does not worry about the skill set of the current city manager, John Beckmeyer, and is puzzled about how he was hired. Hoven hired a firm called T2 to recruit city manager candidates, and the council set a list of guidelines including education and experience for a city manager. T2 came up with several candidates that met the criteria, but Beckmeyer, who had neither the education nor experience that T2 was told was required, was hired. Beckmeyer has an associate's degree in animal science from Western Texas College and a bachelor's degree in animal science from Sam Houston State University. Beckmeyer has been the executive director of the Republican Party of Texas and a political ally of Hoven. Hendrick said he doesn't know Beckmeyer, but believes his questions about the hire are shared by many Odessans. Why go through hiring T2 if you aren't going to listen to them? He said, I don't know him and am not saying he is good or bad. I know he does not fill the skill set. If elected, Hendrick said he will not office out of City Hall. It's not a full-time job, he said. Why does a mayor need an office when he doesn't work there? It's important for a mayor to understand his role, he added. This is about the citizens of Odessa, he said. We are all the same. We live in West Texas, and all I want to do as mayor is make sure we all have water and sewer and trash and a great police and fire department, and that employees have great morale. He said Odessa can make it better if all Odessans work for it. The things I can guarantee is I have worked hard all my career and I will always do what is best for Odessa, he said. I feel like we are in a bad place now, but my goal is to focus on what I can do and not what someone else has failed to do. He said he hopes for a normal election of candidates running on their platforms and engaging in forums to explain their vision for Odessa. I have a servant heart and don't want any glory. I am here to serve. Election 2024. October 7th is the last day to register to vote. Early voting begins October 21st and ends November 1st. November 5th is election day. Other municipal offices up include District 1 and 2 City Council seats. Also, the at-large seat on City Council, Steve Thompson, District 2, has indicated he will seek the office again, as have District 1, Mark Mata, and at-large, Denise Swanner. Odessan Craig Stoker has indicated he will run for the at-large seat. Midland fentanyl trafficker sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. A Midland man was sentenced in a federal court in Midland Wednesday to 20 years in prison for his role in a fatal fentanyl trafficking conspiracy. According to court documents, William Jake Childers, 39, trafficked counterfeit M30 oxycodone pills containing fentanyl that led to the death of 2 West Texas men. In May 2022, Winkler County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to an unattended death at a residence in Kermit. Autopsy results confirmed the cause of the male victim's death to be acute fentanyl toxicity. An investigation confirmed that the victim and Childers had communicated about the sale of fentanyl pills. In May 2023, Midland Police Department officers discovered an unconscious male victim at a residence who died after being transported to a Midland hospital. The death was also confirmed to be from fentanyl toxicity, and investigators again traced the fentanyl pills to Childers's drug trafficking conspiracy. Childers was pulled over for a traffic stop by Ranger Police Department officers in October 2023. A search of his vehicle revealed 740 fentanyl-laced M30 pills and a loaded firearm. This office has again prosecuted a case in which fentanyl traffickers valued quick profits over human lives. U.S. Attorney Jaime Esparza for the Western District of Texas said in a news release, "Sadly, fentanyl continues to plague our communities and claim the lives of our friends, neighbors, and loved ones. My office remains committed to vigorously prosecuting fentanyl traffickers and seeking strong sentences as a deterrent to these criminals. Unfortunately, the poison these traffickers are selling is killing more and more Americans," Special Agent in Charge Tawanda R. Thorne James for the Drug Enforcement Administration's El Paso Division said in the release. "The public needs to know the DEA investigates these drug-related deaths. And if you kill someone by selling them your poison, you will be held responsible for that death." Co-defendant Jesse Cortez remains in custody awaiting sentencing. The DEA investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Joe Mahoney and Amy Hale prosecuted the case. House passes GOP bill requiring proof of citizenship to vote, boosting election year talking point. The U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday passed a proof of citizenship requirement for voter registration, a proposal Republicans have prioritized as an election year talking point, even as research shows non-citizens illegally registering and casting ballots in federal elections is exceptionally rare. The legislation approved largely along partisan lines, but with a few Democrats voting in favor, is unlikely to advance through the Democrat-led Senate. The Biden administration also says it's strongly opposed because it says safeguards already are in place to verify voter eligibility and enforce the law against non-citizen voting. Since the House vote will give Republicans an opportunity to bring attention to two of their central issues this year, border and election security, it also provides an opportunity to fuel former President Donald Trump's claim that Democrats have encouraged the surge of migrants so they can register them to vote, which would be illegal. Non-citizens are not allowed to vote in federal elections, nor is it allowed for any statewide elections. Research and audits in several states show there have been incidences of non-citizens who successfully registered to vote and cast ballots, but it happens rarely and is typically by mistake. States have mechanisms to check for it, although there isn't one standard protocol they all follow. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson, a key backer of the bill, said in a news conference earlier this week that the Democratic opposition means many Democrats want illegals to participate in our federal elections. They want them to vote. During a speech Wednesday, he called the vote a generation-defining moment. "It's just a small percentage, a fraction of all those illegals that Joe Biden has brought in here to vote, if they do vote. It wouldn't just change one race," he said. "It might potentially change all of our races." On his Truth Social platform this week, Trump suggested that Democrats are pushing to give non-citizen migrants the right to vote and urged Republicans to pass the legislation. The Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or go home and cry yourself to sleep. The fixation on non-citizen voting is part of a broader and long-term Trump campaign strategy of casting doubt on the validity of an election should he lose, and he has consistently pushed that narrative during his campaign rallies this year. Last month in Las Vegas, he told supporters, "The only way they can beat me is to cheat." It also was part of a wider Republican campaign strategy, with GOP lawmakers across the country passing state legislation and putting non-citizen voting measures on state ballots for November. Democrats and voting rights advocates have said the legislation is unnecessary because it's already a felony for non-citizens to register to vote in federal elections, punishable by fines, prison, or deportation. Anyone registering must attest under penalty of perjury that they are a U.S. citizen. Non-citizens also are not allowed to cast ballots at the state level. A handful of municipalities allow them to vote in some local elections. They also have pointed to surveys showing that millions of Americans don't have easy access to up-to-date documentary proof of citizenship, such as birth certificates, naturalization certificate, or passport, and therefore the bill could inhibit U.S. citizen voters who aren't able to prove their status. During the Wednesday floor debate, Representative Joe Morrell of New York, the top Democrat on the House Administration Committee, expressed concern that the bill would disenfranchise various American citizens. He mentioned military members stationed abroad who couldn't show documentary proof of citizenship in person at an election office, as well as married women whose names have changed, Native Americans whose tribal IDs don't show their place of birth, and natural disaster survivors who lost their personal documents. Morrell said he doesn't see the bill as an attempt to maintain voter rolls, but as part of larger GOP-led plans to question the validity of the upcoming election. The false claim that there is a conspiracy to register non-citizens is a pretext for trying to overturn the 2024 election, potentially leading to another tragedy on January 6, 2025, he said. Yet Republicans who support the bill say the unprecedented surge of migrants illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexican border creates too large a risk of non-citizens slipping through the cracks. They could purposely or inadvertently break the law to cast ballots that sway races amid narrow margins in November's elections. "Every illegal vote cancels out the vote of a legal American citizen," said Representative Brian Steele of Wisconsin, the Republican chair of the House Administration Committee. If passed, the bill would require non-citizens to be removed from state voter rolls and require new applicants to provide documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. It also would require states to establish a process for applicants who can't show proof to provide other evidence beyond their attestation of citizenship, though it's unclear what that evidence could include. Oil Secretary of State Frank LaRose recently found 137 suspected non-citizens on the state's roll out of roughly 8 million voters and said he was taking action to confirm and remove them. In 2022, Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger conducted an audit of his state's voter rolls specifically looking for non-citizens. His office found that 1,634 had attempted to register to vote over a period of 25 years, but election officials had caught all of the applications and none had been able to register. In North Carolina in 2016, an audit of elections found that 41 legal immigrants who had not yet become citizens cast ballots out of 4.8 million total ballots cast. The votes didn't make a difference in any of the state's elections. In a document supporting the bill, Johnson listed other examples of non-citizens who had been removed from the rolls in Boston and Virginia. The elections department there didn't immediately answer questions from the Associated Press to verify the claims. Several secretaries of state interviewed during their summer conference in Puerto Rico this week said non-citizens attempting to register and vote is not a big problem in their state. Kentucky Secretary of State Michael Adams, a Republican, said that his state already requires photo ID to vote, and that most people use a driver's license. We don't really have a problem with this in my state, he said in an interview. Utah Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson, a Republican who oversees elections, said she supports the legislation in concept, but provided a cautionary tale about how aggressively culling voter rolls can sometimes result in the removal of qualified voters. A few years ago, everyone in her household received mail ballots for a municipal election except her. She had been removed from the rolls because she had been born in the Netherlands, where her father was stationed with the U.S. Air Force. I was the lieutenant governor. I was overseeing elections, and I got taken off because I was born in the Netherlands, she said. So I think we definitely have those checks and balances in the state of Utah, maybe to an extreme. The House vote comes days after the Republican National Committee released its party platform, which emphasizes border security issues and takes a stand against Democrats giving voting rights to migrants living in the country illegally. Republicans are expected to shine a light on their immigration and election integrity concerns at the Republican National Convention next week in Milwaukee, where Trump is scheduled to accept his third nomination for president. Odessan accused of raping three girls. An Odessa man was arrested Tuesday after three separate children told authorities he sexually assaulted them on multiple occasions over the last 2 years. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a call from Medical Center Hospital Sunday after a 12-year-old girl reported Brian Adam Fallon had sexually assaulted her on Friday and on at least five other occasions beginning in 2023. While investigating the girls' claims, two other girls ages 13 and 14 said they too had been sexually assaulted by Fallon, the report stated. According to the report, both outcries detailed matching methods of operation in the assault. A sexual assault nurse examination was conducted on all three victims, and there was evidence at least one of the girls had been sodomized. The report indicated Fallon was arrested on suspicion of aggravated sexual assault of a child. He remains in the Ector County Jail Wednesday night on a $75,000 surety bond. Pfluger applauds U.S. House passage of the SAVE Act. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, released the following statement after the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, SAVE Act, to protect U.S. elections. The integrity of our election system is at risk due to lax voter registration laws and President Biden's wide-open border that has allowed nearly 10 million illegal aliens into this country. The SAVE Act ensures that only American citizens can vote in the U.S. by requiring proof of citizenship for voter registration while empowering states to clean up their voter rolls. If you can't provide documentation that you are an American citizen, you should not be able to vote, period. This legislation comes at a time when illegal immigrants who have recently entered the country have been given the opportunity to register to vote in New York, Washington, D.C., and areas of California. Pfluger's legislation to prevent non-citizens from voting in Washington, D.C., recently passed the U.S. House of Representatives by a bipartisan vote.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading MRT for July 12, 2024. Deep in the Heart, Pachuco's nominated for Texas Restaurant Association Award by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Pachuco's Midland Toughest Restaurant is closed, but only for this weekend as they head to San Antonio for the Texas Restaurant Association's TRA Lone Star Bash. The restaurant was nominated for TRA's Deep in the Heart Award, which is an award that highlights successful and creative restaurant owners and chefs with concepts not located in the Houston, Dallas, Austin, or San Antonio metros. Pachuco's is one of four nominees for the award. The other nominees are George's Restaurant in Waco, Blue Bonnet Cafe in Marble Falls, and Picoso's Mexican Kitchen in Lubbock. According to their website, the TRA is the leading business association for the Texas's $106 billion food service industry and serves more than 57,000 locations. They are dedicated to enhancing the business environment for their members. Each year, the TRA hosts the Texas Restaurant Show, which is the largest annual food service show in the Southwest. Ruben Carrasco and his wife, Adalia, started Pachuco's as a food truck in 2019 and took Midland by storm with their fusion menu of unique burgers, Korean-inspired dishes, and blend of flavors. They opened their brick and mortar in December of 2022. Carrasco said he found out they were nominated for the award and he was scrolling on Instagram and saw a post. The Deep in the Heart Award is awarded to restaurants or chefs that are doing something that impacts the restaurant industry differently, Carrasco said. It's very important for us because we've only been doing this for a year and a half as a restaurant. Prior to opening their food truck, the husband and wife duo had no experience in the food industry. We're up against Blue Bonnet Cafe. They've been operating since 1929, Carrasco said. George's in Waco has been operating since 1930. Picoso's in Lubbock, their owners had a restaurant in Plainview for 20 years. Carrasco said that he's honored to be nominated for the award and that his business speaks for itself. It's very humbling because we do things differently, Carrasco said. So to be considered amongst those restaurants and families who have been doing this for years, it's important to us. Carrasco added that he's honored to be nominated for the Deep in the Heart Award because Tootsie Tamantes of Snow's Barbecue in Lexington has been nominated and won the award before. She's the queen of barbecue in Texas, Carrasco said. Snow's Barbecue has been named the top 10 best barbecue spots. To be nominated for the same award only a year and a half into being a restaurant means a lot to me. Carrasco said that he's after Texas. His goal is to be recognized around the state for his Pachuco's. I love the Permian Basin. This is why I chose to do my business here, Carrasco said. We're after Texas. People around the state know us and see what we're doing. The TRA will announce their award winners at the 2024 Texas Restaurant Awards Ceremony on Sunday. The whole Pachuco's team will head to San Antonio for the awards ceremony and a company holiday. I wouldn't be able to do what I do without them, Carrasco said. I've got a good crew. People come and go, but the core remains, and they're the catalyst of change and of what I'm trying to create. Pachuco's will close early Friday at 3 p.m. to prepare for their trip. They will reopen on Tuesday morning. This is Christy, and I'll be reading MRT for July 12, 2024. Deep in the Heart, Pachuco's nominated for Texas Restaurant Association Award by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Pachuco's Midland Toughest Restaurant is closed, but only for this weekend as they head to San Antonio for the Texas Restaurant Association's TRA Lone Star Bash. The restaurant was nominated for TRA's Deep in the Heart Award. Deep in the Heart Award, which is an award that highlights successful and creative restaurant owners and chefs with concepts not located in the Houston, Dallas, Austin, or San Antonio metros. Pachuco's is one of four nominees for the awards. For the award, the other nominees are George's Restaurant in Waco, Blue Bonnet Cafe in Marble Falls, and Picoso's Mexican Kitchen in Lubbock. According to their website, the TRA is the leading business association for the Texas's $106 billion food service industry and serves more than 57,000 locations. They are dedicated to enhancing the business environment for their members. Each year, the TRA hosts the Texas Restaurant Show, which is the largest annual food service show in the Southwest. Ruben Carrasco and his wife, Adalia, started Pachuco's as a food truck in 2019 and took Midland by storm with their fusion menu of unique burgers, Korean-inspired dishes, and blend of flavors. They opened their brick and mortar in December of 2022. Carrasco said he found out they were nominated for the award and he was still scrolling on Instagram and saw a post. The Deep in the Heart Award is awarded to restaurants or chefs that are doing something that impacts the restaurant industry differently, Carrasco said. It's very important for us because we've only been doing this for a year and a half as a restaurant. Prior to opening their food truck, the husband and wife duo had no experience in the food industry. We're up against Blue Bonnet Cafe. They've been operating since 1929, Carrasco said. George's in Waco has been operating since 1930. Picoso's in Lubbock, their owners had a restaurant in Plainview for 20 years. Carrasco said that he's honored to be nominated for the award and that his business speaks for itself. It's very humbling because we do things differently, Carrasco said. So, to be considered amongst those restaurants and families who have been doing this for years, it's important to us. Carrasco added that he's honored to be nominated for the Deep in the Heart Award because Tootsie Tamantes of Snow's Barbecue in Lexington has been nominated and won the award before. She's the queen of barbecue in Texas, Carrasco said. Snow's Barbecue has been named the top 10 best barbecue spots. To be nominated for the same award only a year and a half into being a restaurant means a lot to me. Carrasco said that he's after Texas. His goal is to be recognized around the state for his Pachucos. I love the Permian Basin. This is why I chose to do my business here, Carrasco said. We're after Texas. People around the state know us and see what we're doing. The TRA will announce their award winners at the 2024 Texas Restaurant Awards Ceremony on Sunday. The whole Pachuco's team will head to San Antonio for the awards ceremony and a company holiday. I wouldn't be able to do what I do without them, Carrasco said. I've got a good crew. People come and go, but the core remains, and they're the catalyst of change and of what I'm trying to create. Pachuco's will close early Friday at 3 p.m. to prepare for their trip. They will reopen on Tuesday morning.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.